Sure, thanks. I led the way down the hall, through the atrium, and past the dining room to the cavernous kitchen. The previous owners had combined the main kitchen and catering kitchen into one huge room with more cabinets and countertops than I would ever know what to do with. The walls were papered in an old-fashioned but charming plaid and adorned with solemn gold-framed still lifes of food.
It looks the same, but different, he observed. I was here a few years ago before your parents moved to D.C.
None of us was ready to let go of the house, so I moved in, I explained, turning on the coffee maker. I gestured for him to take a seat at the turquoise breakfast nook table my sister and I had helped my mom paint one summer weekend 1,000 years ago. Alan shook his head.
I can't believe he's gone. I mean, I feel bad feeling bad when you must feel 1,000 times worse. But he was such an important part of my life these past few years.
It makes me feel better knowing that he mattered to so many people, I assured him. Cream? Sugar?
Both, please. Is Mrs. Walton here?
She's spending the night with friends. I put a mug that said, I put the lit in literature under the spout and opened the fridge. He blew out a breath.
I'll catch up with her next week. I just can't believe he's gone.
He winced.
Sorry. I feel like I'm appropriating your grief.
It's our grief, I assured him, putting his coffee in front of him and making one of my own, even though I didn't really want it.
I don't know if you know, but he came into my life when I needed him most.
How did he do that? I asked as the coffee maker spit out another cup.
I used to want to be an architect, and then when I hit 15, I did some dumb stuff, he said, cupping the mug with both hands.
We all do dumb things as teenagers, I assured him, taking the chair across from him. I had done a few spectacularly stupid things myself. His lips quirked.
That's what your dad said, too. But my dumb stuff had consequences. Consequences my mom paid for. That's when I decided I was going to be a lawyer.
Good for you, I commended.
I met your dad at a community job fair. I was on my own after high school, sleeping in my aunt's basement, and was working 2 jobs trying to save up for law school. Simon made me feel like it was possible, that I could do it. He gave me his card and told me to give him a call if I needed any help. I called him that night.
Alan paused and smiled wryly. My heart squeezed.
I blurted it all out. How I'd screwed up, how my mom paid the price, how I wanted to make it right. Simon listened to my story and didn't judge me, not once. And when I got done telling him why I was such a mess, he told me he could help me. And he did.
It was so exactly like my father. The lump in my throat was back. I took a sip of coffee to loosen it. Wow, I said. Alan rubbed his eyes with his fingers.
Yeah, he changed my life. He invested hours in me, helping with scholarship and grant applications. He introduced me to his favorite professor at Georgetown. He was the first person I called when I got accepted. And when I still came up short, after my savings and all those grants and scholarships, your dad made up the difference for the first year.
He stopped, his eyes going damp. Pride filled my chest, wrapping itself around the pieces of my broken heart. My father wasn't just a good man, he was the best. When do you graduate? I asked.
May,
Alan said proudly. Then his face fell.
Since my mom couldn't be there, your parents were going to go.
My heart hurt for him, for my mom, for me. There would be a dad-shaped hole in every event from now on. I reached across the table and squeezed his hand. I'm sure my mom is still planning to go. She loves graduations and weddings and baby showers. Anything with a party, really.
My mom was like that too, he said with a sad smile. Someday I'm going to throw her a huge surprise party for everything she did for me.
He talked about his mother in an interesting mix of past and present tense that made me curious. Is your mom still around? He looked down at his coffee.
She's in prison.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's my fault, but I'm going to make it right.
I'm sure she's really proud of you, I said. His smile was stronger now.
She is. She really is.
I knew firsthand how good that parental pride felt, and felt another pang. Alan glanced at his watch and grimaced.
I should be getting back. I have another exam tomorrow morning.
Are you sure? The snow looks like it's really starting to come down.
The highways are clear, and I've got four-wheel drive, he assured me.
I walked him to the door. It was really nice to meet you, Alan.
You too, Sloane.
I waved Alan off and had just enough time to clean up the coffee mugs and start crying before the doorbell rang again. It was still echoing throughout the house when a barrage of fists banged cheerfully against the wood. Seriously? Can't a girl have an emotional breakdown in some peace and quiet? I muttered into a soggy tissue.
Let us in before we freeze our asses off, Lena yelled through the front door.
We brought hugs and tequila, Naomi called.
Naomi brought hugs, I brought tequila, Lena corrected.
Shit, I murmured under my breath before sticking my head under the faucet in the kitchen and washing away all signs of my crying jags. They entered the house like two beautiful, energetic whirlwinds, toting grocery bags and pitying looks. Lena looked glamorous in a royal blue parka and fur-trimmed boots. Naomi was pretty in a pink puffy jacket and earmuffs. Why are you here? I asked as they shed their winter layers.
Lucian tattled and said you were spending the evening alone instead of at your sister's, Naomi announced cheerfully, her perky ponytail bouncing.
That interfering son of a bitch.
Don't worry, Naomi retaliated by unleashing the Morgan boys on him to ruin his solitude, Lena assured me. I didn't ruin his solitude. I made sure that he had the emotional support he might need, Naomi corrected.
You have to have emotions to require emotional support, I pointed out.
Lucian is pretty upset about your dad's death. They were close, Naomi said.
I wanted to argue, to question her, but I didn't have the energy. I changed the subject instead.
Where's Waylay? My little tech genius is sleeping over at Liza J's to fix her smart TV again, Naomi announced.
Double shit. If overnight childcare arrangements had been made, I wasn't getting rid of them that easily.
Naomi slid her arm around my shoulders and steered me toward the staircase. Why don't you go upstairs and take a shower? We'll get dinner started.
Forcibly shooed upstairs, I slunk down the wood-paneled hallway on the second floor to my bedroom, where I proceeded to take the longest shower in the history of indoor plumbing. I spent the first half of the shower passive-aggressively taking my time in hopes my friends would get bored and leave. When it became clear from the scent of garlic that wafted into the bathroom that this was not going to be the case, I spent the second half crying quietly until I felt as if I'd washed enough emotion down the drain to appear normal for a few hours. I combed my wet hair and entered my bedroom, crawling onto the window seat. Outside, the snow continued to fall. Knox's pickup was parked in Lucian's driveway. I hoped he was having a miserable time with his retaliatory forced socialization. My stomach growled, and I realized I hadn't eaten since Lucian's burrito delivery that morning, except for the French fries I'd stolen off his plate, and out of the bag in the car. I returned to the bathroom, slapped on some moisturizer, then reluctantly headed downstairs to the kitchen. My friends had topped store-bought pizzas with hot sauce and banana peppers, my favorite. There were 2 packs of cookie dough on the counter, as well as 3 bags of chips with an assortment of dips. It looked as though Naomi had brought all the fixings for honky-tonk margaritas, which she was pouring into 5 bucket-sized glasses. Nothing says morning like post-funeral margaritas, I observed. Morning looks like whatever you want it to look like, Naomi insisted. She had changed out of her clothes and was wearing red thermal pajama shorts with a matching long-sleeve shirt and fuzzy knee-high socks.
It can be getting drunk and going sledding at 1 a.m., or it can be pizza, cookies, and a binge watch of Cougar Town, Lena said.
She, too, had changed into pajamas, but hers were silky and black. Her fuzzy flip-flops had delicate puffs of fake fur that Meow Meow was glaring at from the center of the breakfast nook table. I wandered over and stroked a hand down the cat's back. She flipped over onto her side with a grumpy grunt and grudgingly accepted my affection. You're not seriously abandoning snowstorm sex with your men just to spend the night with me, are you? I asked my friends. You shouldn't be alone tonight, Naomi insisted, nudging a margarita in my direction. I like being alone, I argued. Being alone meant not having to pretend to be okay. Being alone meant not having to be messy and emotional in front of any witnesses.
You're welcome to be alone with us, Lena announced. I thought you'd be on my side.
Her smile was sharp and her eyes sparkled.
You have no one to blame but yourself. You and Naomi forced me to give up my lone she-wolf ways. Technically, first prize in that endeavor goes to Nash. But Sloane and I did earn the silver medal, Naomi agreed.
So you're saying I'm trapped in this codependent circle? I asked, picking up the proffered margarita. Lena nodded.
Pretty much. You might as well surrender now.
The pizza did smell good, and it would probably be rude if I didn't have at least a little tequila.
Well, since you're already here.
Lena dumped 2 slices onto a paper plate and held it out. I took it and sneaked a warm, cheesy bite while my friends plated their own meals. The doorbell chimed again.
Go away,
I called. But I was drowned out by Naomi and Lena cheerfully yelling, Come in! We were all halfway to the door when it opened and Naomi's best friend, Stefan Lau, and his biker barber boyfriend Jeremiah strolled inside. With his sweater and blazer, Steph looked as if he'd just finished a photo shoot for a New England old money fashion label. Jeremiah, on the other hand, looked more like a hot hipster biker with a man bun, scarred boots, tight denim, and a David Bowie t-shirt.
Ladies, I see you've started without us, Steph said.
I told you the dress code was casual, Naomi teased.
You look like your rich Uncle Bartholomew has a yacht docked in Martha's Vineyard, I observed.
You know, Steph, he doesn't do casual,
Jeremiah said with affection as they both shrugged out of their coats.
There's nothing wrong with looking good. Now I believe I was promised a margarita the size of my face, Steph said.
Someone's got good taste,
Jeremiah said, plucking Lucian's coat from the closet.
Well, 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 who does this beauty belong to?
Steph demanded, stroking a hand over the cashmere. Shit.
No one, I said quickly. Is that Burberry?
Lena asked, reaching for the label.
Please tell me you're sleeping with someone who has really good taste.
I should have just left his damn coat on his damn kitchen counter.
Naomi buried her face in the fabric.
So soft, and it smells amazing.
Her head came up, a frown pinching her mouth.
And familiar.
Steph, Jeremiah, and Lena each took a whiff.
Lucian, they said together.
All eyes returned to me. I turned my back on them and took my margarita and pizza into the living room, a space crowded with mismatched furniture, a 6-foot fireplace with actual marble angels holding up the mantle, and built-in cabinetry crammed with family history. My friends followed on my heels like a flock of rabid ducklings.
"Please tell me I'll find his pants upstairs under your bed," Lena said. "Please tell me you can barely walk because he unleashed his undiluted reservoir of manly testosterone on you," Steph demanded.
"Please tell me you two finally realized how you really feel about each other," Naomi squealed.
I dropped onto a striped wingback chair that had been worn teddy bear soft by 2 decades of family rear ends, placing my dinner and drink on the brass-topped side table.
"Oh my God, weirdos. He gave me his coat to wear this morning because it was cold, and he wanted me to stay warm enough to listen to him yell at me."
Naomi gasped.
"He yelled at you at your father's funeral?"
"That sounds about right," Jeremiah said.
Lena winced.
"Yeah, he's not exactly known for being warm and fuzzy at the office."
"The man would yell at me at his own funeral," I pointed out.
"This story just took a lame, non-nude turn. I'm getting that margarita,"
Steph announced and headed in the direction of the kitchen.
"What was he yelling at you about? Do you want me to kick his ass at work tomorrow?"
Lena asked. Lena had quit her often dangerous, always-on-the-road job as an insurance investigator and was now consulting part-time with Lucian's team while she and Nash planned their wedding.
"I can accidentally shave his head next time he comes in for a cut," Jeremiah offered.
"I'd rather do the ass-kicking and head-shaving myself. What does his research team research anyway? Ways to torture baby pandas?"
I asked Lena, hoping to change the subject.
"I haven't been brought into the inner sanctum yet, but so far, no signs of baby panda torture."
She settled herself into the pilled blue armchair in front of the fireplace and draped her legs over one arm. Naomi perched on the couch and neatly arranged the coasters on the wood plank coffee table between stacks of books and trays of candles. Steph returned with 2 gallon-sized margaritas and handed one to Jeremiah. They joined Naomi on the couch, Jeremiah comfortably slinging an arm around Steph's shoulders. Everyone stared at me expectantly. If they wanted a story about Lucian, they'd come to the wrong woman.
"What?"
I asked snarkily.
"We'll give you 2 options. You can either talk about your dad, or you can talk about suit daddy," Steph said.
"I think I want to start a family."
I blurted out the words and then immediately shoved 1/2 slice of pizza into my mouth to prevent me from speaking again. Lena choked on her margarita.
"Option number 3, then,"
Jeremiah said, eyebrows winging high.
"What made you start thinking about that?"
Naomi asked. I shrugged and continued to chew aggressively.
"Don't answer. We'll guess," Steph offered.
"Let's see. Sloane decided it's time to start a family because she's already pregnant by a time-traveling Italian billionaire."
"I see you gave that audiobook I recommended a try," I said around the pizza in my mouth.
"Maybe it's just that she's in her late 30s and a well-meaning gynecologist said it's now or never,"
Naomi offered, glancing down at her plate.
"Bingo,"
Lena said and pointed at Naomi with her pizza crust.
"See, Steph, you and Jer have penises, which fire sperm. Sperm doesn't have the kind of expiration date that eggs do. The longer we wait to have kids, the harder it can be to conceive. If you were heterosexually inclined, you could be firing full test into the vaginas of 20-somethings on your 80th birthday."
Steph grimaced and took a dramatic sip of margarita.
Gross.
"Do you want to start a family? Or do you feel like you should start a family?" Naomi asked me.
"I think I want to," I said. "I held my cousin's baby at the funeral today, and it must have kick-started my dormant ovaries or something. Mom and Dad wanted nothing more than to have a big, messy, intergenerational family. But Dad only got to enjoy 1 grandkid before he died because I was too busy being awesome at my job."
"Guilt isn't a great reason to start a family, my sexy little librarian,"
Steph pointed out. Jeremiah nodded.
I've got to agree with Steph, and not just because we're dating. Family is a big deal.
Jeremiah would know. He came from a large, loud Lebanese family. I don't want a guilt baby, I scoffed. It's just I put so much time into building the professional side of my life, I forgot about the personal side. I want a hot husband who rubs my feet on the couch and knows that I put hot sauce on my pizza. I want to complain about spending Saturday mornings at soccer games and bake 3 dozen cupcakes at midnight because my self-centered preteen forgot to tell me she volunteered me.
Do you have any baby daddy potentials?
Lena asked. Are you considering prioritizing a partner or a baby first? Asked the ever-practical Naomi at the same time. I took a contemplative sip of my margarita. Ideally, a partner. But do I really have time to meet someone, force them to fall in love with me, and then get knocked up before my eggs turn to tiny balls of dust? Then again, if I start with kids, I might limit the dating pool and miss out on my perfect husband. On the other hand, if a guy is turned off by kids, then he wouldn't be the kind of husband I want. My mental gymnastics were exhausting. Things would be so much simpler if I walked out the door and met the perfect guy tomorrow. But in reality, if I walked out the door, the only man I was going to run into was a surly one in a suit. The man I loved to hate.
Okay, that was a lot, Lena said. Let's take it one step at a time. Are you on any dating apps?
No.
Seriously?
Steph asked. He and Jeremiah shared a baffled couple glance.
How do you meet men?
Jeremiah asked.
I don't know. Organically?
I hedged.
Well, organic doesn't get the job done in this day and age,
Lena announced.
I'd like to point out that you met your fiancé by arriving in town and kissing his brother.
I turned to Naomi and Steph.
And you two met your respective men by walking into a coffee shop and a barber shop.
Steph tipped his glass at me.
Then you can start walking into every establishment and kissing every human with a penis in a 50-mile radius. Or you can download an app and build a kick-ass dating profile.
I groaned.
Is there anyone in town you'd consider dating? Naomi asked, pen poised over paper.
Where did you get that notebook? I asked.
She carries it in a thigh holster, Steph quipped.
I scraped my hands over my face. I can't even think of a single man in this town that I'd be willing to sleep with. Anyone close to my age I've known since kindergarten. No offense, Jeremiah. He winked.
I get it. It's hard to be attracted to a guy once you've seen him pick his nose and wipe it on his construction paper Thanksgiving turkey. What about suit daddy?
Steph asked. I opened my fingers over my eyes to glare at him. Not in this lifetime.
Give me 3 good reasons why,
he challenged. I dropped my hands.
He's unbelievably rude. He's selfish. He's so stubborn and controlling that everything has to be done his way or he loses his damn mind. He's got the whole rich and powerful thing going, which means he's absolutely corrupt. He's involved in politics, and not in the I want to make a difference in the world way, but in the I want other rich, powerful jackasses to owe me favors way. He can't connect with other human beings because he's a soulless robot out to make the biggest pile of money for himself so he can hoard it all like some kind of goblin king.
My audience was blinking at me.
Anything else?
Lena asked, trying her best to hide her amusement.
Yeah, that stupid coat is worth more than my Jeep, I said, pointing at the coat closet. I Googled it.
There was another long stretch of silence.
So we'll put Lucian in the no column then, Naomi said before writing something down in her notebook.
Fine, I'll download a dating app, I acquiesced.
That's my girl. I'll be your swipe right expert, Steph volunteered.
I'll be your swipe right straight consultant, Lena said, hefting her margarita glass in my direction.
I don't want to make any assumptions. Is Mr. Wright definitely a mister?
Steph asked me.
As much as I would have zero qualms making out with Alicia Keys after she serenades me with a ballad, I can't live without the dick. Man with penis, Naomi said out loud as she made another note. What else are you looking for in a man? I guess he should be funny and kind and generous. And it would be nice if he was into gardening to help me keep up with the backyard. Obviously, he should like kids and books. The cat pranced into the room. I patted the arm of my chair. Meow Meow shot me a look of derision and flounced out as if I'd insulted her. And bad-tempered cats, I added.
Anything else? Lena asked.
Good in bed. Really good in bed, I amended. Oh, and I'm kind of into reading glasses.
Steph sighed approvingly.
Ugh, hot nerds are so hot.
You'll have beautiful little nerd babies, Naomi predicted, hugging her notebook to her chest. I need more pizza.
I need another margarita, Steph said. I'll make a fresh batch and bring the pizza out here, Jeremiah volunteered.
All four of us watched his excellent rear end as he exited the room.
Really nice catch, Lena said to Steph.
He sighed.
I know.
Okay. I think I want to talk about something dad adjacent, I announced.
Hold on. Let's set the mood,
Lena said before hitting me in the face with a throw blanket. Naomi clicked the remote for the fireplace and then tiptoed around the room, lighting the candles I had scattered everywhere. Steph nudged a box of tissues toward me. Everyone sat back down and stared raptly at me.
You know how we've been talking about starting some kind of community foundation with the proceeds of the sale of your house on Long Island?
I prompted Naomi. She nodded, pen hovering over her notebook.
Well, Dad left both Maeve and me a little money, and I was thinking about how I could use it. What if we created some kind of free legal aid initiative?
Naomi's eyes danced in the firelight.
I love it. We could organize local attorneys to provide pro bono services. A lot of the bigger firms encourage their associates to do freebie work. They'd eat up the positive PR,
Lena pointed out. Naomi and I shared a knowing grin.
What?
Lena asked.
You said we, I said.
She grimaced. Shut up. Don't make me regret befriending you pains in the ass. Besides, my last bonus was embarrassingly huge. I guess I wouldn't hate putting part of it toward a good cause.
Great, now I'll look like Scrooge McCheapskate if I don't cough up some cash too,
Steph complained.
We won't judge you, Naomi promised.
Yes, we will, I said.
Fine, I'll pony up. But I hope you know this means downsizing my real estate budget.
What real estate budget? Lena demanded.
Steph shrugged and looked at his suede boots.
I maybe, kind of, am starting to possibly consider the idea of someday broaching the subject about moving in with Jeremiah.
Naomi let out a high-pitched squeak and was immediately shushed by Steph. He looked furtively over his shoulder in the direction of the blender sounds.
Zip it, Witty.
Sorry,
she whispered, eyes shining.
I knew things were getting serious since you're here all the damn time, Lena pointed out.
Well, they're serious for me, but I don't know how serious they are for my hot, bearded barber boyfriend.
He's crazy about you, Naomi insisted, her voice still squeaky. You two hot dudes are head over heels for each other, I said, keeping my voice low.
Steph looked both hopeful and nauseated.
We haven't really discussed a future, but I want us to have one. What do I do? Ask if I can move into his bachelor pad, which, by the way, looks like it was furnished by some renegade rebel motorcycle gang? Seriously, who has a diamond plate steel coffee table? You can't even slide a wine glass across it. Besides, won't I come off like some crazy stalker if I'm all like, hey, can I move in with you?
I'll be honest.
The whole spending 15 days a month here when you technically live in New York is a lot more crazy stalkery than buying property here, I pointed out. Honestly, I can't believe you let me ramble on and on about my ovaries and my dead dad for that long without bringing this up.
Steph snorted.
I know. Geez, Sloan, stop making everything about your recently departed father already.
We were all still laughing when Jeremiah returned with the blender and the pizza.
What's so funny?
He asked, handing me the entire pizza tray.
Oh, I was just telling everyone what Knox did during the last snowstorm, Naomi said innocently.
4. Ambushes and Angels. Lucian. It's showtime, Nash said, stifling a yawn as another gun battle raged on screen. My gaze flicked to the laptop on the ottoman. Sloane's front door was open, and 5 bundled-up adults appeared to be tiptoeing down the porch steps. The smallest of the shadowy figures drew my attention, just as she always did. My wife insists they're getting ready for bed, Knox said, holding up his phone. Your wife and my fiancé are beautiful liars, Nash said, getting up to stretch. The dogs perked up on the couch, sensing the activity around them. It's 11 o'clock at night during a snowstorm. How much trouble could they get into? I asked. I wouldn't put it past them to hack into a nuclear reactor, Knox muttered, heading for the foyer. Nash followed. Never a dull moment, he said fondly. I watched them stagger and stomp their way toward my place. I sighed and rubbed my hands over my thighs. Waylon peered at me from under one long floppy ear, begging me with sad brown eyes to stay on the couch so he wouldn't be forced to go outside. Sorry, Waylon, I told the dog and headed after the Morgans. You joining us in the lady wrangling? Nash asked as he pulled on his boots. You're outnumbered, I pointed out. My gear is in the mudroom. I'll meet you out there. Hang on, Knox said. He was peering through the sidelight window. They're behind my truck. I can't tell what they're doing. Smells like an ambush to me, Nash said, shrugging into his coat. There was a grumble, a thump, and then a smaller thump from the living room. Both dogs appeared. Waylon looked pissed off about his interrupted nap. Piper looked thrilled to be included in the manly conference. An ambush? I repeated. I may have hidden on the porch roof during the last snowstorm, rolled an arsenal of snowballs, and then destroyed Naomi and Way when they came home from the mall, Knox said. Love turned men into idiots. Knox's phone lit up in his hand. He rolled his eyes and turned the screen to us. Naomi.
We just saw a bear outside. It ran toward Lucian's house. Did you see it?
Definitely an ambush, Nash said, yanking his knock-em-out PD knit hat over his head. Can't believe Jer is out there with him. He's supposed to be my friend. Knox heaved a heroic sigh. Guess I should probably face the firing squad alone.
I can't stand by and watch that happen, Nash insisted, slapping his brother on the shoulder. I don't want to spend the next week listening to you bitch about your stupid frostbitten face.
I, on the other hand, had no problem watching Knox be force-fed snow by 3 vengeful women, and Steph and Jeremiah, but I was at least going to do it with a front-row seat. We can use the door on the side of the garage, I offered. Knox brightened. We'll flank him. That'll teach him. We trooped into the mudroom with the dogs on our heels, and I armored up. In the garage, Knox glanced down at my gloves and snorted. I can't believe you're going into a snowball fight with fucking designer driving gloves. I peeled one off and slapped him across the face with it. The sting was most likely absorbed entirely by his thick beard. Don't make me challenge you to a duel. I have a better arm than you do, I warned him. As much as I enjoy watching anyone slap my brother in the face, if we don't get out there soon, they're just going to try to steal your truck and do donuts in the street, Nash said, gesturing toward the door.
Right, here's the plan, Knox said. We head out,
take a minute to build an arsenal, then we attack.
Sounds good to me,
Nash agreed, a little too amicably. I was immediately suspicious. The Morgan brothers' love and loyalty ran deep, but they still behaved like prepubescent pains in the ass on a sugar high when left to their own devices. Knox gestured for us to be quiet and opened the side door. When he peered outside, Nash turned to me and made a slashing motion across his throat. Then he mimed making a snowball and hitting his brother in the head with it. I gave him the double thumbs up.
Did you see anything?
Nash whispered to Knox.
It's dark and it's fucking snowing. All I see is a bunch of white shit,
Knox snarled back.
Look harder,
Nash advised before reaching into his pocket, whipping out his phone and texting someone, presumably his fiancée. Smirking, he pocketed it again.
Let's move, he said.
I'm on point, Knox insisted.
Then get your ass out the door so we can at least start packing snow, dumbass,
his brother said, pushing him out the door. I followed them into the white night. 6 inches of snow blanketed the ground, but it didn't quite muffle the giggles that were coming from the front of the house. Waylon and Piper trotted outside. The Basset Hound put his nose to the ground and immediately snowplowed a path to the fence that divided my property from Sloane's. He lifted his leg, nearly peeing on the curious Piper as she followed. Knox knelt in the snow and began frantically forming snowballs.
Just make as many as you can carry,
he hissed at us. Nash followed suit. I, however, went to war, thinking bigger than a pathetic handful of snowballs. I stepped back into the garage and grabbed a yellow plastic bucket off the shelf. Outside, I dragged it across the ground, filling it in one sweep.
Waylon, come here, Knox ordered.
The dog had a full muzzle of snow and a crazy look in his eyes.
Knox held the hound's jowls between his hands.
Go get mommy.
Waylon sneezed, and we heard the giggles abruptly cut off.
Bless you,
came Jeremiah's deep baritone in a stage whisper.
I didn't sneeze, Naomi responded, but thank you anyway.
Guys, shut up or they're going to hear us,
Lena hissed even louder.
Go, Waylon,
Knox whispered, pushing his dog toward the front of the house.
Find mommy.
Nash looked down at Piper, who was standing on the toes of his boots, looking like she was hoping to get scooped up and saved from the indignity of snow.
You heard your uncle. Go find mommy.
The two dogs tore through the snow and cut around the front of the house, barking ecstatically.
Let's go, Knox said grimly.
We'll see you on the other side, I promised. Knox rounded the corner of the house and earned a full frontal pelting of snowballs before he could throw his first round. There was a torrent of hysterical laughter as Nash eagerly unloaded his arsenal on Knox's back, paying special attention to his head and ass. I strolled up to Knox, held the bucket over his head, and dumped it. Naomi was staged in the bed of Knox's truck, several dozen snowballs piled at her feet. Jeremiah was documenting the moment on his phone, while Steph stood next to him holding the largest margarita I'd ever seen in the other. Sloane and Lena were lying tangled in the snow, laughing, both dogs frantically licking their faces. There was something earthy, elemental about Sloane's husky laugh. She didn't laugh like that around me. Not anymore. Naomi let out a peal of laughter.
You look like the abominable snowman,
she called to her husband. It was a fair assessment. Knox's beard was completely coated in snow. Knox unfroze, raised his arms, and growled. His wife shrieked and tried to make a break for it, but Knox vaulted into the back of the truck and wrapped her in a snowy embrace. He rubbed his face against her bare neck, making her scream louder.
That's definitely a framer, Jeremiah claimed as he snapped away.
Nash tugged the still-laughing Lena to her feet.
You smell like tequila and bad decisions, he said.
She wrapped her arms around his neck and gave him a noisy kiss on the mouth.
And you smell like we should have sex.
Sloane, on the ground, mimed a fit of vomiting. I tossed the bucket aside and held out a hand to her. She eyed it for a beat too long, so I reached down and hauled her to her feet. Her mitten-clad hands gripped my forearms as she regained her balance. She was still laughing. Her lovely face was the picture of joy. Up close, I zeroed in on the darker smudge of forest green around the iris of her left eye.
"Knock down my shirt!"
Naomi screeched from the back of the truck. "These shenanigans better not ruin my boots," Steph complained, looking at his feet. Sloan was grinning, her emerald green eyes clear and bright. "You're not drunk," I observed.
"None of us are. It's the snow. It turns us into fourth graders. Case in point," she said, and waved both magenta mittens at me.
"When's the last time you did something as undignified as playing in the snow?" "You can take the man out of Knock'em'out, but you can't take Knock'em'out out of the man," I quipped. She frowned.
"Wait, I forgot. I'm mad at you again."
"With us, I think that's always safe to assume," I said dryly. She bent at the waist and picked up the scruffy Piper, who was going to need a new sweater since this one was covered in clumps of snow.
"I'm extra mad because you ratted me out to Naomi when all I wanted was a quiet evening at home by myself."
"As you can see, I too am suffering the consequences of my actions," I said, gesturing in the direction of Knox and Nash. Sloan buried her face in Piper's wet, wiry fur.
For some ridiculous reason, Naomi felt the Tattler shouldn't be alone tonight either. My suffering is almost worth knowing that you have to entertain your pals instead of figuring out how to drive up the cost of blood pressure medicines or whatever it is you do to entertain yourself.
I entertain myself by binge-watching Ted Lasso and cheering for Rupert the Villain. Sloan tried and failed to smother her laugh.
Damn it.
It was a headier thrill than anything I could recall in recent history. That was pathetic.
"Hold up. Are those two actually smiling at each other?"
Lena demanded.
"My God, it's a snowstorm miracle," Steph said, making the sign of the cross as Jeremiah slung an arm around his waist.
"I better call into the station and see if some kind of asteroid is about to hit us," Nash joked.
"I don't like this," Knox said, giving me the evil, snowy eye.
"I love it," Naomi insisted, hooking her arm through his. "Har, har, you guys are hilarious," Sloan said, taking a deliberate step back.
She turned her back on me and took that warm feeling with her. Knox and Nash insisted on spending the night after the girls had commandeered the dogs and taken them next door for the night. It was midnight. Knox was passed out on the twin bed in the bedroom staged for a boy, while Nash slept on the pull-out couch in my office. Anyone would have thought from the long, impassioned goodbyes they shared with Naomi and Lena that they were going off to war. What was it about love that turned men into simpering idiots? I considered myself lucky that it was at least one thing I didn't have to worry about. I turned my attention back to the financial records in front of me. The digital fundraising platform would make an interesting addition to my evil corporate empire. I saved my notes to the cloud and fired off an email to my assistant to add a meeting with the platform partners to my calendar. I took off my glasses and rubbed my bleary eyes with both hands. I wanted to go to bed, to fall, exhausted, into a dreamless sleep, but I couldn't. Not yet. Not with Sloane's bedroom light still on, glowing warm and gold like a beacon as the snow continued to fall. It was a habit worse than smoking, in my opinion, not going to bed until Sloane's lights went dark. It was a compulsion that did me no favors, considering the woman was a bookworm who read past midnight most nights. I glanced down at my copy of The Midnight Library near my elbow and wondered if that was something else I'd give up once I finally sold this place. I was pathetic, secretly sharing a bedtime as if timing my lights out with hers somehow ensured that she was safe. The sooner I sold this house and cut ties, the sooner we'd both be free. The floodlight in Sloan's backyard lit up the winter wonderland, and I was on full alert as I leaned forward to peer out the window. There she was.
She changed into yet another pair of pajamas and topped them with a dark, bulky coat and bright red snow boots. I watched as she trudged purposefully out into the yard, willing her to stop before she was lost to me behind the hemlock and clump of arborvitas. I rose from my chair and held my breath. She paused, still in view, and I relaxed. Sloane tilted her head to the sky and spread her arms wide. Then she pitched backward, falling flat on her back. My muscles coiled reflexively, ready to run downstairs and out the door until I realized she was moving. Her arms and legs were working in a sweeping motion, in and out, in and out. I watched, mesmerized, as Sloane Walton made a snow angel. I pressed my palm to the cool glass. "Take care of my girls," I heard Simon's words as clearly as if he'd spoken them aloud. It wasn't his fault. He didn't know the effect his daughter had on me, how dangerous she was to me, how fatal I could be to her. She was sitting up now, head tipped back. I wondered if she was thinking of Simon, too, if that was yet another tie that unfairly bound us together. In a moment of weakness, I brought my hand to the window and traced her figure with my fingers on the glass. I saw it before she did, the distant orange streak of light in the sky, a shooting star. Sloane brought a hand to her face, then sat there in stillness. She moved suddenly, done with her own stillness. I watched, captivated, as she carefully worked her way to her feet before jumping clear of her snowy creation. Hands on hips, she stared down at it and nodded. Then she looked up, not at the sky this time, but directly at me. My desk light was off. There was no way she could see me in the window, I told myself as I pulled my hand away from the glass. Still, I stood in the shadows and watched her stare up at my window. After an agonizing minute, she looked away and slowly made her way back to the house. It wasn't until she disappeared from view and the lights in her bedroom finally went out that I realized something. She'd been wearing my coat.
5. Hot guy in my bedroom. Sloane. 23 years ago. I should have been finishing my trigonometry homework, or at least showering after softball practice. But to be fair, I hated math, and I didn't allow myself to shower until I'd finished my homework, so really my only option was to take a book break. There was a tiny possibility that my frustrations might have been motivated by the fact that I was exactly one chapter away from the really good stuff in my pilfered copy of Kathleen E. Woodowice's Shanna. It was my third reread of Mom's tattered paperback, and I was besotted with the mercurial Rourke Beauchamp. Even though his and Shanna's behavior would totally have been problematic in real life, I still liked the underlying idea that a secret, torrid affair could somehow provide a safe space where you could be yourself. I climbed onto the window seat cushion and built a mound of pillows behind me. A whiff of armpit caught me. I winced and shoved the middle window open to let in the fresh spring air. My team was on track to make the district playoffs this year, and the coaches pushed us harder every practice. I wanted it. It was all part of Sloane's awesome life plan, which I was fully dedicated to. But right now, all I wanted to do was lose myself in a sexy Caribbean love story. In seconds, concerns about my dried sweat and lame homework disappeared, and I was transported into the book. I was midway through the good stuff when my attention was ripped from the page by our next-door neighbor, Mr. Rollins, reversing his pickup truck out of the driveway much too fast. He shifted gears, and the truck launched forward, spinning the tires as it accelerated out of view. My stomach knotted. Things hadn't been good next door since Mr. Rollins had lost his job a year ago. Dad said he'd been some kind of foreman at the chemical plant a few towns over, but the plant had closed. After that, Mr. Rollins stopped mowing the lawn. He didn't grill burgers anymore either. Sometimes, if my bedroom window was open to the spring breeze, I could hear him yelling late at night.
My dad never yelled. He sighed. He didn't get mad at me and Maeve. He got disappointed. I wondered what Lucian did when his dad yelled. A tiny thrill rolled through me just thinking about him. Lucian Rollins was a junior and starting quarterback on the varsity football team. I liked to think the serious, dark-haired boy who took out the trash shirtless was the reason for my teenage sexual awakening. I'd gone from thinking boys were gross, which at 12 and 13 was absolutely accurate, to wondering what it would be like to be kissed by the bad boy next door. Lucian was gorgeous, athletic, and popular. I, on the other hand, was a four-eyed, busty, almost 16-year-old who would rather spend a Friday night curled up with a good book than drink warm beer by a bonfire in the field known as third base. I was not in his league. That league was occupied by cheerleaders and class presidents and beautiful teens who somehow escaped the desperate lack of self-confidence that had been bestowed on the rest of us. I excelled at a not-sexy sport and had spent last week in detention thanks to my strong objections to dress code enforcement when my friend Sherry Salama Fiasco had gotten detention over a skirt that was 1 inch too short. Instead of policing the fashion choices of girls, why don't you put that energy into teaching boys how to control themselves? I'd argued. Loudly. I'd even earned some enthusiastic applause and a nod of approval from one of the senior cheerleaders in my study hall. I didn't hate the street cred, and my parents had refused to ground me for standing up for what was right. I heard a creak and a slam next door. My book fell off my lap as I craned my neck for a better look. My favorite thing about my room, besides the fact that it had its own bathroom, library-worthy bookshelves, and an awesome window seat for reading, was the view. From my window seat, I could see the entire side of Lucian's house, including his bedroom window. There he was. Lucian stalked into the backyard. Unfortunately, he was wearing a shirt. His shoulders were hunched, and he was absently rubbing his right arm while staring pensively at the ground. Our backyard, thanks to Dad's green thumb, was a fenced-in wonderland of flowers and trees and shrubs. It was late March, and the cherry trees were blooming, an official announcement of the arrival of spring. Lucian's backyard looked more like an abandoned lot. The grass was patchy, and there were tufts of knee-high weeds against their side of the fence. A rusty grill was abandoned against the side of the garage. I didn't mean to judge, of course. Lots of people had better things to do than play in the dirt every weekend. Though maybe Lucian should think about helping out around the house if his dad wasn't going to take care of the yard work anymore. There was a push mower next to the grill, for gosh sakes. I didn't want to have a crush on a lazy, entitled guy. I willed him to approach the mower. Instead, Lucian kicked at a rock on a bare patch of lawn and sent it flying. It soared through the air before smacking against our fence with a loud crack. "Hey!" I yelled. His gaze instantly came to my window. I flattened myself on the seat cushion and put a pillow over my face. "Well, that was stupid, dummy. He already saw you," I said into the pillow. I sat up again, but Lucian was nowhere to be seen. The cherry tree outside my window shuddered, and I heard a grunt. What the? There was something in the tree. No, not something. Someone. I blinked several times and wondered if I needed a new glasses prescription because it looked like Lucian Rollins was climbing my tree. He shimmied up the trunk and gave the branch that skimmed over the porch roof a testing bounce. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God! A hot, popular junior had just climbed my tree because I'd yelled at him. It was with a heady mix of horror and excitement that I watched him scale the branch before nimbly jumping onto the roof. I slid off the cushion and back toward the middle of my room as Lucian Rollins threw a leg over my windowsill and climbed inside. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God! Lucian Rollins was in my bedroom! Shit! Lucian Rollins was in my bedroom! I glanced around, hoping my room wasn't totally embarrassing. Thank God Mom had insisted on giving me a room makeover for my 12th birthday. My dollhouse and hammock full of stuffed animals had been replaced with floor-to-ceiling bookcases my dad had installed. The pale pink walls had been covered with a moody blue paint. But I'd just dumped two loads of clean laundry in a haphazard pile on the floor in front of the closet because Mom needed the laundry basket. I'd also emptied the contents of my backpack at the foot of my bed because I couldn't find my favorite berry pink highlighter that I reserved for only the most important class notes. Dear Lord. I had a favorite highlighter. And this past fall, Lucian had broken the school's passing record on the football field. My uninvited guest said nothing as I panicked silently. Lucian picked up my book, flipped it over, and read the back. He raised a mocking eyebrow. I crossed to him and snatched it out of his hand. "Why are you in my room?" I demanded, finally finding my voice.
"Mostly considering apologizing for the rock," he said, his voice low and smooth.
"Mostly?"
He shrugged and began to wander the room. "I've never been inside your house before. I wanted to see what it was like."
"You could have used the front door," I pointed out. If I were a cheerleader, I'd know how to flirt. I'd have showered and be wearing matching pajamas and lip gloss. I'd toss my hair without hurting my neck, and he'd feel compelled to kiss me. But I wasn't a cheerleader. I was me, and I had no idea how to talk to my hot neighbor crush. He paused at my desk and flipped through my CDs. His lips curved in a smirk.
"Destiny's Child and Enrique Iglesias."
"You can't just break into my house and judge my taste in music."
"I'm not judging. I'm intrigued."
He was even cuter up close. Wait, no, not cute. Gorgeous. His hair was thick and dark and curled a little at the ends. He had a straight nose and high cheekbones that were so defined, Mrs. Closser chose him as the model for portrait drawing in art class. Becky Bunton said Lucian had taken his shirt off and Mrs. Closser had to stand in front of her hot flash fan for 10 straight minutes. Of course, Becky also claimed that her uncle invented JanSport book bags, so you had to take her claims with a grain of salt. Lucian was tall with an athletic build that filled out his worn jeans and a long-sleeve knock-em-out football shirt in a way that leaned more toward man than boy. Was it getting hot in here? Did I need a hot flash fan? I hadn't had sex yet. I wanted my first time to be with someone who made me feel like a heroine in a book. Someone who could sweep me off my feet and make me feel special and good, not sweaty and awkward in the back seat of an ancient Toyota like Becky's first time. Lucian, with his muscly forearms and romantic hair, would make a girl feel that way. Special. Important. How was I supposed to date boys in my own league when presented with this specimen? My dating options were restricted to the lower tier of high school guys, like a member of the stage crew or maybe one of the slower boys on the track team. But none of them measured up to my gorgeous next-door neighbor. It wasn't just his looks. Lucian moved through the halls of Knock'em-Out High with a knowing confidence that the crowds would part around him. I, on the other hand, scurried from gap to gap, staring at the backs and shoulders of the entire student body. Lucian cleared his throat, and I blinked. I'd been staring at him for a very long time, long enough that he'd taken a seat on the bench at the foot of my bed and was staring back, expectantly. Do you want a soda or something?
I asked, not sure what I'd do if he said yes.
My parents were downstairs, and they would be sure to notice me sneaking 2 root beers upstairs. Unlike the parents on TV, mine didn't miss a thing.
No thanks,
he said, eyeing my trig homework. He picked up the top sheet of paper, the one I'd scrawled, "This is stupid, I hate math," all over. I snatched it out of his hand and crumpled it behind my back. I was smart. That was my thing. Put me in an English class or history or science, and I was a guaranteed straight-A student. But math was a different story.
I could help you,
he said, reaching behind me and taking the paper back.
You're good at math?
I couldn't quite keep the incredulity out of my tone.
You think just because I play football, I can't be smart too?
Actually, I'd been thinking that in this scenario, I should be the hot athlete's tutor who he couldn't help falling in love with during intimate study sessions. But this could work too.
Of course not, I scoffed. Then give me a pencil.
He held out a hand, and for a second, I battled the fantasy of simply putting my hand in his, and then jumping into his lap and kissing him. But I wasn't confident in my balance. What if I kneed him in the crotch or knocked the wind out of him? Good sense won out, and I picked up my pink mechanical pencil from the carpet and handed it over.
Come here,
he said, sliding down to the floor and patting the spot next to him. I sat obediently.
You had the first part right,
he said, retracing my steps with the pencil.
But here's where you went wrong.
I sat next to him and watched his big hand move the pink pencil over the sheet. Leave it to Lucian Rollins to make math sexy.
Wow, you really are smart, I said when he circled the answer.
His mouth curved ever so slightly at the corners.
Don't tell anyone.
Your secret is safe with me, I promised.
Your turn,
he said, handing me the pencil. He smelled good, which made me paranoid that he could smell me. It took me 3 tries and an infinite amount of patience from Lucian, but I finally got it. I got the next problem on the 2nd try. And when I nailed the right answer on the 3rd problem in 1 take, I jumped up and spiked the pencil like it was a football in the end zone. Yes! Bite me, math! I was halfway through my victory dance when I remembered that I had a hot junior audience and sweaty armpits. Lucian leaned back on his elbows on the carpet, watching in amusement. There was an actual smile on his face. One I'd put there. Something warm bloomed inside me. I was pretty sure it was a hot flash. I tucked my hair behind both ears and sank back down to the floor. So thank you for that. I don't usually get that excited over math homework. The smile was still there, and it was turning my insides to mush.
I take it you're more into reading than trig?
He nodded toward my bookcases. Oh, yeah. I like books. A lot.
Are you going to write them?
I shook my head. Nah, reading is just a hobby. I'm going to get a softball scholarship and go into sports medicine. I had it all figured out. I was what my coach called an aggressively enthusiastic pitcher.
Really?
He asked. You don't think I can do it?
It just must be nice to know what you want to do.
You're almost a senior, I pointed out. Where are you going to college? What are you going to major in? He shrugged, then winced and rubbed absently at his arm.
I don't know yet.
I frowned. Well, what do you want to be?
Rich.
He sounded like he meant it, and not in a flippant teenage boy tired of Aunt Alice asking him what he wanted to be when he grew up way. Okay. And how are you going to do that? I asked.
I'll find a way.
I was disappointed. A guy like Lucian should have big, specific dreams. He should want to innovate hearing aids for babies, or maybe run a cool dental practice like my mom. Hell, even aiming for a professional football player would be better than nothing. Sloane, dinner! My mother called from downstairs. Crappity crap crap. Okay, I yelled back.
I guess I should go, Lucian said.
I didn't want him to go. But I also didn't want my parents to know a really hot football player had shimmied up a tree into my bedroom. In case he did it again, and I was showered and wearing matching PJs and lip gloss when he did.
Ask the boy who climbed through your window if he wants to stay for dinner. We're having meatloaf.
Mom shouted the invitation. Oh my God, I muttered into my hands, mortified. I glanced up at Lucian and he grinned. A full-on, knee-dissolving, stomach-swooping grin.
Thanks, Mrs. Walton, but I need to get home, he called back.
You're welcome to use the front door, Mom shouted.
I winced. You probably should. Otherwise, they'll just come up here.
Okay,
he said, not seeming too concerned with my humiliation. Squaring my shoulders, I marched us out of my bedroom and down the stairs, unsure of what reaction I was about to face. Standing up for women's rights was one thing in my parents' eyes. Sneaking boys into my room was an entirely different kind of rebellion. My parents met us at the foot of the steps in the kitchen. Dad was in a frumpy beige sweater that matched his khakis too closely. Mom was still in her work scrubs. Both had glasses of wine.
Mom, Dad, this is Lucian. He helped me with my trig homework, I said, awkwardly making the introductions.
It's nice to meet you, Mr. and Mrs. Walton, Lucian said, shaking hands like he was an adult.
I had a vision of him in a fancy suit presiding over meetings with his serious face and strong handshake. Maybe rich wasn't such a lame goal after all.
It's a pleasure to meet you officially, Lucian, Mom said, shooting me a "we'll discuss this later" look.
You're always welcome here, especially if it keeps Sloane from hurling her math books across the room,
Dad said. My toes curled in embarrassment.
Dad, I hissed.
He reached out and ruffled my hair.
I continued to die of the fatal, incurable condition of embarrassment.
Are you sure you can't stay for dinner? Mom offered. Lucian hesitated for just the barest second, and my parents were on him like pugs on peanut butter.
Join us,
Dad insisted.
Karen makes a mean meatloaf, and I made the baked potatoes with horseradish sour cream.
Lucian glanced at me, then at his feet, before nodding.
If you're sure you don't mind.
Not at all, Mom insisted, steering us toward the kitchen island where the plates were stacked. Oh my God, I was going to have dinner with Lucian Rollins. Yay! And my parents. Boo! It definitely wasn't a date if chaperones were present, at least not in this century.
Come on, you two, Mom said, leading the way. You can set the table.
Your parents are nice,
Lucian said as I shut the front door behind us. The scent of cherry blossoms was light on the crisp evening air. And embarrassing, I said, cringing at some of the topics of conversation. You really don't have to help my dad get the summer decorations down from the garage rafters this weekend. My ladder-fearing 5'7" father was thrilled by Lucian's height. My mother was thrilled with his apparent inability to say no.
I don't mind,
he said, shoving his hands in his pockets.
Don't let them hear you say that, or else Mom will have you moving file boxes at her office, and Dad will enlist you to trim the taller branches in the backyard.
Your house is great,
Lucian said. It sounded almost like an accusation.
I'd say thanks, but I didn't really have anything to do with it. Mine sucks,
he said, jerking his chin in the direction of the small beige two-story next door. I noticed that Lucian's father still hadn't returned.
Maybe you would think it was nicer if you mowed the lawn, I suggested helpfully.
He looked down at me, amused again.
I doubt that would make things better.
I crossed my arms over my chest to ward off the chill.
You never know. Sometimes making things nice on the outside makes them better all the way through.
It was like when I woke up early enough to slap on some mascara and lipstick before school. A bold lip and long lashes made me feel like a prettier, more put-together version of myself.
We'll see, he said. Thanks for dinner. I've got to get back and do my own homework.
He backed away. Desperate for just another minute with him, my mind raced for something to say.
Hey, I hate to be that girl, but you still haven't apologized for the rock,
I pointed out. He flashed that little half-smile, one foot on the porch, one foot on the top step.
Guess I'll have to do that next time.
Next time. My stomach did the nervous, swoopy thing again.
I'll see you around, he said.
Yeah, see you, I said breathlessly. I stood there like an idiot and watched him amble down the walk before cutting across the driveway to his yard. Next time, I whispered. I went to bed that night with a smile on my face, Rourke and Shanna temporarily forgotten. The next morning when I left for school, I couldn't help but notice that Lucian's dad's truck still wasn't in the driveway. But the front lawn had been mowed.
6. Breakfast Ambush. Sloane.
Thank you, Lou,
I mumbled with the hair tie in my teeth. Lou Witt, Naomi's dad, held the diner door for me as my hands were full trying to tame my hair into the semblance of a knot on top of my head.
Looking a little frazzled this morning, noted his wife, Amanda, the new part-time counselor for the school district.
I glanced down at my oversized sweatshirt with its fresh coffee stains. Stains achieved after dumping half a mug down my front when Mom had texted to remind me I was meeting her for breakfast. My leggings had a hole in one knee, and I'd forgotten to change out of my slippers. Crap.
One of those days, I said, securing my bun. Actually, it was more like weeks.
That's to be expected, sweetie, Amanda assured me with a sympathetic arm squeeze. Don't forget to take care of yourself.
I won't, I promised before waving the wits off and heading inside. I spotted my mother in one of the back booths and hurried toward her.
Sorry I'm late. Naomi called. She and Eric finally found the missing garter snake from the petting zoo Wednesday night. He was in the window, wrapped around a pothos plant.
I came to a screeching halt and stared, open-mouthed, at the man sitting opposite her. Mom smiled up at me as if she weren't sharing a table with my mortal enemy.
I asked Lucian to join us since he was still in town.
Lucian didn't look very happy about this turn of events either, but to be fair, the man rarely looked anything other than aggressively constipated.
Sit, Mom said, gesturing toward Lucian's side of the booth.
You know what? I forgot I have an appointment with someone about something.
Sloane, sit your rear end down now.
She deployed the mom voice. Unfortunately, being a grown adult hadn't come with an instant immunity to that tone. Lucian reluctantly scooted in. Great. Now I had to play along too, or look like the bigger, more immature asshole. I sat gingerly with one butt cheek on the vinyl, one foot in the aisle, in case I needed to make a fast escape. Mom interlaced her fingers on the table and looked at us expectantly. She looked tired and sad, which made me feel like a petulant child. I settled more comfortably in the booth and picked up a menu. "So what's with the breakfast meeting?" I asked. "I'm heading back to Washington today," she announced. "I said my goodbyes to your sister and Chloe this morning. Now it's your turn." I put down the menu and ignored the way the right side of my body seemed to be absorbing Lucian's body heat. "Mom, there's no rush. If you want some peace and quiet, you know you can stay with me." She'd split her time and knock 'em out between my place and my sister's while we'd planned the services. I'd enjoyed having her as a roommate. It made the house seem less empty. Plus, she bought really good snacks. She shook her head. "I appreciate the offer, but it's time for me to get back. Your father left me a very explicit list of things I need to take care of." "Let me help." I was suddenly desperate to keep her in town. I didn't want her dealing with everything on her own. I also didn't want to be abandoned.
"What kinds of things need taken care of?"
Lucian asked. I spared him a glance. Not that it was any of his business, but I was interested in the answer, too. "Well, for one thing, he wanted his clothes donated to a nonprofit that gives homeless men work wardrobes to make it easier for them to interview for jobs. I'm also supposed to gather and deliver all his case files to Lee V. Coops at Ellery and Hodges for any future appeals."
"I'll take care of that,"
Lucian offered, pulling his phone out of his pocket and opening his texts.
"I'll have one of my employees pick up the files at your place and courier them over to the new firm."
Why the hell was Lucian I Own Half the World Rollins volunteering to help my mother with errands? And why was my mother acting